Part 3. Short Passages. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D.
Passage 1. Anthropologist Margaret Mead is one of the most influential social scientists of the last century. She was born in 1901. Her father was a professor of finance. Her mother was a scientist. Margaret began her studies in 1919 at DePuy University in Indiana. She next decided to study anthropology at Columbia University in New York. In graduate school, Margaret had married Luther Cressman, who went to Europe to continue his studies. She went alone to Samoa in 1925. Margaret studied the lives of Samoan girls. She said their life was free of the anger and revolt found among young people in other societies. She also said their society did not urge them to love just one man. Margaret said she reached these beliefs after 9 months of observation in Samoa. They helped make her book, Coming of Age in Samoa. Miss Mead was 27 years old when her book was published in 1928. When Margaret returned to the United States, she met Rio Fortune. Her marriage to Cressman ended. She married Fortune, also an anthropologist, in 1928. They went to New Guinea to work together. It would be the first of 7 trips that she would make to the area in the next 47 years. Not long after their New Guinea trip ended, Margaret's marriage to Fortune also ended. In 1936, she married for the third time. As time went on, Margaret Mead's fame continued to grow. Her books sold very well. She appeared on radio and television programs. After her trips, Margaret always returned to the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. She worked there for more than 50 years. She also taught at several universities in New York. Questions.
17. What does the speaker say about Margaret's research on Samoa?
When was Margaret Mead's book published?
19. What does the speaker tell us about Margaret Mead's life?
Passage 2. The visitors to Britain may find the best place to sample local culture is a traditional pub, but these friendly pubs can be minefields of potential impoliteness. An anthropologist and a team of researchers have unveiled some of the unknown rituals of British pubs, starting with the difficulty of getting a drink. Most pubs have no waiters. You have to go to the bar to buy drinks. A group of Italian youths waiting 45 minutes before they realized that they would have to take their own. This may sound inconvenient, but there is a hidden purpose. Pub culture is designed to promote social contact in a society known for its reserve. Standing at the bar for service allows you to chat with others waiting to be served. The bar counter is possibly the only site in the British Isles in which friendly conversations with strangers is considered entirely appropriate and really quite normal behavior. If you haven't been to a pub, you haven't been to Britain. This tip can be found in a booklet. Passport to the Pub, the Tourist's Guide to Pub Etiquette, a customer's code of conduct for those wanting to sample a central part of British life and culture. The trouble is that if you do not follow the local rules, the experience may fall flat. For example, if you are in a big group, it is best if only one or two people go to buy the drinks. Nothing irritates the regular customers and bar staff more than a gang of strangers blocking all access to the bar while they chat in haste about what to order.
Questions. 20. Why are there no waiters in most British pubs according to the speaker? What does the speaker say about British pub culture? 22. What does the speaker suggest we do in British pubs?
3. They can be seen more frequently than ever before on college campuses. Wearing flannel and thick-rimmed glasses while listening to indie music, one might find them playing unusual musical instruments, shopping at second-hand stores, or expressing themselves in unique ways. They call themselves hipsters. Being hip used to mean following the latest fashion, but gradually the word has evolved into a meaning of cool, sharp, and not conventional. Hipsters value independent thinking, progressive politics, and appreciation of creativity and intelligence. Hipsters take pains and pride in not being mainstream. However, their culture has become quite trendy. This irony is central to their culture and offers an interesting paradox. Many young adults have started to view hipsters' outlook as cool and are adopting their counterculture outlook themselves. This has led to specialized brands, stores, and music for hipsters. Ironically, some such stores have gained mainstream popularity. This has seemingly weakened the anti-mainstream culture. Hipsters reject materialism and mock mainstream culture, but they are really behind material comforts? Do they have any ideas of their own if they look down upon mainstream so much? Christy Wampel, an associate professor of literature at Princeton University, U.S., is not so sure. She says the hipster is a contradiction in himself and an easy target of mocking. Writing in the New York Times, Wampel paints a less positive picture of a typical hipster. The hipster is a scholar of social forms, a student of cool. He studies continuously, searching for what has yet to be found by the mainstream. He is a walking citation. His clothes refer to much more than themselves. He tries to negotiate the age-old problem of uniqueness, not with concepts, but with material things.
Questions. 23. What does the speaker say about the hipster? 24. What is said to be important in the hipster's eyes? 25. What is the associate professor Wampel's opinion about the hipster?